Welcome to the Brown Thomas Podcast. In today's podcast, I'm delighted to speak with one of the world's most renowned fashion accessory designers, Anya Hindmarsh. An environmentalist with philanthropy at the core of many of her campaigns, Anya is famous for her creativity and craftsmanship when it comes to designing her beautiful bags. In our conversation today, I speak to Anya at the height of her most recent creative spree, having just published her self-help book, If in Doubt, Wash Your Hair, and ahead of the opening of The Village, an ambitious development of 5 unique Anna Hindmarsh storefronts on London's Pont Street, and we discuss the reasons behind and the impact of her newest campaign, I Am a Plastic Bag. I'm Louise Duffy, and this is the Brown Thomas Podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Anya. So happy to have you joining us today.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to join you today.
And we know you from your very many hats, entrepreneur, designer, environmentalist, but now author, and you have a new book out. So congratulations on that. And I love the title, If in Doubt, Wash Your Hair. So who first bestowed this wonderful advice upon you?
Well, thank you. I think I made it up. Actually, I'm not sure. I'm often asked what is the best bit of advice for, sort of busy working woman and mum possibly. And I always would say, if in doubt, wash your hair, just because it sort of makes every woman smile, just because we know how much better we feel somehow if we've taken that bit of extra time to look after ourselves, basically. But it also speaks to that word doubt, which is interesting. And the book is very much about doubt, actually, exploring doubt.
And doubts in yourself, in business, or what kind of doubts do you explore?
Well, really doubt across, I think all women's lives, really. So that might be doubt in parenting, doubt in being a woman in business, or doubt of being a creative, and doubt of being an entrepreneur. So all sorts of doubts, all those things that have really helped me through my career. Because of course, everyone suffers doubt. And I think that people feel bad if they suffer doubt, but it's just completely normal. So it's really a book about that and all the advice that I've sort of found really useful over the years.
Yeah. And you find, you work with so many people and you've been in this industry, in the fashion industry for so long. Would you say that it is a characteristic that is more commonly attributed to females?
Yeah, I think probably it is. Although I still think it's something that everyone shares, but that perhaps women, perhaps men are less honest about it. So actually the reason for this book really is just, I think, about honesty and saying, I think that the things I've learned that it took me until this age really to learn and understand have been really helpful. So I just wanted to kind of put them down. So if they help one other person, then that could be a good thing.
And if I was to, glean, it's a wonderful book, but if you were to pick one key piece of advice for living personally, your personal life better, what might that be?
Oh, that's a hard one. Well, aside from I found out what's your hair, there's a lot of advice in there about sort of managing the juggle. For example, I think that my generation, what I refer to as the transition generation, so where we are working probably as hard as our fathers did, whilst also trying to live up to the example our mothers set. And my mother, whilst she worked a bit, didn't work all the time. So I sort of struggled with that. So it's actually sort of being realistic about expectations. But also things like, my father was used to say to me, things come of things. If you do things, things happen. And lots of examples in the book about how if I look back at some nice outcome of something, and if I trace back to how it happened, it's often actually because I went and bought a coffee there, or I went out to lunch, or I bothered to go to that thing that I didn't want to go to, where I'm a person. So it's quite important, if you do stuff, good stuff happens, basically. But loads and loads of advice.
And I think that that's so important too, because often, because everybody is so busy now, that you are reluctant to do the things that don't have a clear outcome, but there's always something that can arise from it.
And it's also often the most unlikely things. It might be something that you see, or you might hear something, or I remember once stopping to get some petrol and seeing these amazing high-vis jackets that were for sale in the petrol station, which inspired a whole collection. So there's just, you never quite know. Had I not stopped for petrol that day, I might not have seen them, so the collection wouldn't have happened. So it's lots of things. So I think you just have to have your eyes and your ears open and be up for doing things. It's really important. Yeah.
And as a female CEO, then winner of British Fashion Awards, appointed MBE, CBE, what about aspiring business women then? People who hope to push on. Is there any key piece of advice there for people like that?
Well, I think it's really important not to try to be a man. So much talk of smash the glass ceiling. And I just think, in a way, that's trying to be something that doesn't necessarily fit us. We have our own set of I think great attributes, women, you know, really bring different things to the workplace. And I talk in the book about the fact that someone once said to me, Anya, you have to take the emotion out of this. And actually I remember after going, no, I don't, you know, that's what I do well. That's what I bring to the table. That's how you lead teams. That's how you design product that actually has hopefully some emotion in it that resonates with your customers. So I think that as women, just, you know, embrace being not just a woman, but embrace being you. There's a lovely Oscar Wilde quote, actually, which is, and I'm going to get it wrong, but something like, be yourself, the other places are taken. And I think that's a really nice bit of advice. And actually just be who you are and do what you do and just keep going.
Absolutely. That's lovely advice. And we are so trained to try and, you know, reduce the emotion in our interactions in the workplace. But, you know, it gives passion too. And I think that's so important. And Les, we have to talk about your passion because, you know, you have been such an advocate for sustainability for so long. And, you know, we all remember your 2007 collection, I'm Not a Plastic Bag. And it was one of the first of its kind to raise awareness around issues of sustainability. And it kind of sparked a debate really about the use of plastic bags. Now there's a brand new collection. We've seen it everywhere as well. I Am a Plastic Bag. So can you tell me a little bit about the concept behind this and the pivot?
Yes, well, so back in 2007, when we did the first project, which is I'm Not a Plastic Bag, it was a very simple aim, really, to raise awareness around the subject of single-use plastic and the excessive use of single-use plastic. And we sort of used the platform of fashion, which is a very sort of vocal industry and communicative industry, and used, if you like, the sort of the it bag formula and put them on all the right arms and so on. And it just went mad. I mean, 80,000 people queued in the UK on the launch day, and then it went round the world, including Ireland, and ended up, you know, with, I mean, people in hospital in Taiwan because of stampedes. I mean, just mad. And obviously we didn't want that to happen, but the great outcome from that project is it had a big, boost to the kind of conversation around the misuse of plastic, but also it actually actively reduced the number of plastic bags that I can't remember, from something like 9 billion to 6 billion, according to the British Retail Consortium. So it made a difference, which was lovely and sparked lots of people then starting to, and I think we contributed to lots of people also doing good stuff as well. But, you know, collectively we made a difference. But then there we were in 2020, that fabulous year that we've all just had. Prior to the pandemic, in February, just prior to the pandemic, we launched a project called I Am a Plastic Bag, because I think I felt that all these years later, post 2007, the original project, that, you know, frankly, the problem wasn't solved. And there's still 8 billion tons of plastic on the planet, apparently, which is pretty horrific. And yet the conversation has moved on to one really of circularity. You know, how can you have things that you use that you keep in circulation? So you take the product, you use it, rather than bin it and put it into landfill, that you put it back, you recycle it and use it again. And so this idea of the circular economy, where things keep being used as opposed to just being filled up. And someone said to me in the first project, when you throw something away, there is no away. And I remember it just stuck with me in a way that's just kept rattling around my head. And I had this sort of vision that, you know, if we had to bury in our garden everything that we couldn't recycle, you know, you would very quickly stop taking all the stuff that you couldn't recycle. And so we came up with this project called I Am a Plastic Bag, which is a bag that was made from 32 half-litre plastic bottles. It took 2 years of R&D, actually, because it was very early into the idea of reusing recycled PET plastic. But the fabric, and we wanted to create something that was really luxurious, but the fabric was so sort of beautiful and it behaved so much like a lovely cotton drill that actually it got dirty like cotton. So we wanted to coat it, but in a recycled coating. And we managed to extract PVB, which is the plastic that's between the glass in car windshields, and use that as a recycled coating. So it was a real labor of love. I mean, in terms of R&D, it was kind of pretty gray hair inducing, to be honest, but it was a really good project. And to launch it, we actually closed all of our stores for Fashion Week as sort of part protest and part art installation, really, and filled them with 90,000 used plastic bottles, which we collected. Filled the shops with these bottles and closed them. And it connected people to that idea of all that plastic in your garden, that idea, you know, look how it looks. This is 8 seconds of landfill. And it was pretty powerful, actually.
And I think, you know, I read so much of what you've been doing for so long, but you have mentioned that slogan, and when you throw something away, it's never away. And that has stuck with me too. Similarly, I bought a little, you know, a sustainable little jacket for my daughter, and on it there was a logo of every piece of plastic that exists. Still, or that was made, still exists. Mm-hmm. And I think it's those little messages that kind of chip away, mm-hmm. and stay with you.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, you know, I think it's about an educational piece. And I really feel that every child should go and visit a landfill site, that every child should go and visit a recycling centre. Apart from it, it's fascinating, it's completely amazing, like a Willy Wonka's world. But it actually, people need to understand what happens to rubbish, and how, you know, you can really reuse it in a really sort of good and sensible way, but you also sometimes can't. And actually there's some quite easy fixes to those things. They might be a little bit uncomfortable for the first sort of change, because any change is difficult, but actually it's really not a big deal. And frankly, if we go back to living a bit like our grandparents did, you know, where the word disposable really wasn't such a thing, we would probably be making a massive shift. So that the shift to this single use way of life is a very recent thing, actually, which we just need to reverse, really.
Mm-hmm. And then let's talk about, you know, the construction of the bag. Then you said it R&D was grey hair inducing. How long did it take you to design and create this?
Well, I think 2 years. I mean, it's probably in my mind before that, but sort of 2 years to actually, you know, actually really develop the fabrics and the coatings and so on. So it was quite a long process, but a really an important one and a good one. And it's been there's been a lovely reaction. It's actually been sitting next to me now. It's been my portable office for the last year, my entire office in this bag, but because it's lightweight and it's easy, it goes at the shoulder. And interestingly, it's trimmed in leather, which was an interesting sort of learning point for me, because I had assumed I would probably trim it in recycled leather. But on the sort of deep exploration that we did into all the sort of aspects of this bag, recycled leather is just leather, old leather, which they grind up and then stick together with a sort of plastic soup. So basically it's 80% plastic. Okay. And the same with vegan leather. Vegan leather is plastic. I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So the only sort of decent things are either pineapple leather or mushroom leather, which are really interesting, but not quite lovely yet for a sort of luxury customer, but maybe hopefully will be. Or interestingly, actually real leather, which if you know where it's, if you have full traceability of the skin, so you know that it wasn't, you know, used in deforestation, so you know that it came from a farm in England or in, you know, Ireland or wherever it might be, and you know exactly the full journey of the cow, you know that the you know, it's a byproduct, the skin, hopefully an organic, organically reared cow. Actually, you need cattle to turn the earth. And I mean, the most important thing in sustainability is preserving the quality of our soil. If you think about soil, that is, you know, it's from the soil that everything that supports us comes. So soil health is the most important thing. And you need cattle actually for soil health. So actually well sourced leather, fully traceable leather that's responsibly tanned without heavy metals and, you know, polluting water and so on, is not wrong. I mean, not in huge quantities, but is not wrong. So it's very, very interesting and a big debate, and we're all learning on this. But sometimes it is just literally going back to how your grandparents and great grandparents lived. Mm-hmm. That's my guiding light almost.
Aren't there some confusing messages though? You know, so we would be led to believe that vegan leather would be a sustainable option, but yet that's made from plastic. It's hard to get the message straight when everybody is sending out a message.
Well, that's the point. And so that's why, I mean, you know, I was confused, honestly, and have just read up and done lots of research. And, you know, we're all in. So, you know, yes, vegan leather means that you're not using animals. But of course, if you're just making plastic, actually, in my view, that's worse. So it depends on you know, what you care about. But if we're caring about the environment, I would argue that vegan leather is not the answer. So there's lots and lots of misleading information. And my guiding light really is going back to common sense. Which is that, you know, don't take a really heavy plastic shampoo bottle and throw it away and get another one and throw it away. Buy one and refill it, you know, for example, or, you know, eat food that's local where you can see how the animals have been reared. They haven't come far, and that actually it's, you know, it's on a lovely field where it's, you know, it's actually important for the soil to have animals moving around. So it's common sense. I think start with common sense. That's where I go back to when I get sort of confused with all the jargon.
Yeah, and we can't all do everything, but to be doing something consistently is so important.
Well, they always say, don't they, that perfection is the enemy of the good. You know, it's just a start. And I think that, you know, certainly as a business, you always feel that you're, you know, you could be shot down at any moment. And I've always said, you know what, you can't worry about that. You just have to get started, do what you can, be honest about what you're good at and what you're not good at, and find solutions. And you do quite quickly. It's a bit like when you start going to the gym, you then start to eat better. You know, it's funny how you kind of go, that was actually quite easy, and you carry on. So it's just, you know, making a few small changes that tends to lead to quite a lot of change.
So could I just ask you again a little more about the production of the bag? And also, I'm quite interested in your other collection, Waste Not, Want Not, which is, again, more very important advice. But how do you take I am a plastic bag. And I think, did you say before, 32 bottles are used to make one of the large tote bags. 32 bottles don't look pretty, and never have and never will. How do you take those products and make them into something as beautiful as the bags are?
Well, that's, for me, that's the really fun part. How can you take waste and do something artful with it that keeps it in a shoulder, on someone's shoulder, and not in landfill? And so that's a really nice challenge. I think that's what everyone's hopefully trying to think about. So for us, what happens, very practically speaking, and I love talking about how things are made, because I think often kids are really disconnected from how things are made, and we all are, actually. So you take the bottle, you recover the bottles, and there are lots of different ways. There's lots of really interesting charity initiatives now where people are paid for the bottles they recover off beaches, for example. So it's really nice. It supports the local population as well. You then grind them down into very, very small little pellets, which you then melt, and you then make into thread, effectively. You can melt them into threads, and then you weave them like a fabric threads. So it really behaves really like a fabric, and you make it into textile. And then we will then take the other plastic, the PVB, which comes from the windscreens, and extract that, which comes in like sort of gummy balls, basically. It's like, so it looks like sort of quite sort of sticky mess. And we will then melt that into a coating, which we can then melt onto the fabric, to give it a sort of coating. So one side is like a textile, like the back of the fabric, and then the coating's on the outside. I mean, it's not without its problems. So the first rolls of fabric that arrived for the first production, for which we'd had an amazing response, all arrived different thicknesses. it was really complicated. So we had to kind of rework so much of it. So I mean, literally, in terms of a profitable project, it was pretty, pretty ropey. But it's still really important to do these projects, I think, actually. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of Waste Not, Want Not, that was a project which was interesting to me, because there's so much waste in fashion in the way that you make things. So if you know, if you get a skin, it's a natural skin, so often it tends to have the most beautiful part in the middle of the skin. So you tend to cut the sort of, if you like, the front of the bag there, because that's the bit that's unmarked and the most, it doesn't have the growth marks or the sort of stretch marks or all the different sort of markings. And then you might tend to make perhaps the inside bits or perhaps the base from some of the side parts of the skin, which are the more flanky parts, or you know, bits of handles and so on. So you use as much as you can. There's still an awful lot of waste. So I wanted to look at a project which we called Waste Not, Want Not, which was how we can use those bits of skins in a better way. So we started making really beautiful bags out of some of these bits of material. So for example, we did patchwork bags, and we did all sorts of just different woven bags where we cut up that leather into strips and then we would weave it. So all sorts of different approaches to and making little fun little sort of keychains and so on. But again, just the messaging, which is that we don't have to have this waste. There are different ways. And I think it's really important, actually, going forward, that, you know, we as my grandmother would say, you know, buy but less, but buy better, you know, rather than buying 10 inexpensive things, buy 5 more expensive things and wear them more. That should be a real badge of pride to wear the same dress 25 times and kind of go, it's my favorite. So that idea of feeling embarrassed to wear something twice is, I think, should be shaming. It's bad. So I think, again, all these, you know, make to amend, waste not, want not, you know, buy cheap, buy, have to buy again, whatever that love expression is. It's all back to common sense and trying to just, you know, behave like our grandparents did.
And that was actually going to be my next question, because I think, you know, fashion lovers are, you know, they're really getting so many messages about, you know, the key trends and, you know, this is the bag you need this season and these are the shoes. And it's hard to be sustainable if you need it now and you need everything now. So exactly that point of just buy less, buy better is vital to solving this problem we have.
Well, we need to make it fashionable also to have, you know, I love it when I sort of speak to someone, they say, this is my favorite jumper, I've had it for 10 years. It's absolutely beautiful. Yeah. The quality is amazing. It's hand knitted in the Shetland Islands and, you know, it's lasted forever. That's cool. It's really cool. What's not cool is something you buy, wear, and then bin or sell it. Well, selling is good. You can keep it in circulation different ways. But I just think, you know, we need to just stop and think, because it's, you know, if you saw the amount of, you know, cheap t-shirts going to landfill, you know, that aren't organic cotton, and just the cost of to the environment of that, it's just stupid, really, simply. So I think it's an exciting moment where, and that's where fashion can make a difference, because it can make it cool. You know, we have an amazing ability in fashion to change people's behavior through trends in a way. So we have to make it trendy to not always have new or to have cheap. But equally, that said, actually, there are an awful lot of amazing fabrics that are coming out now, and women's collectives and incredible supportive groups and sensible manufacturing supply chains where, you know, you can be using, you know, really good fabrics that don't harm the environment, and you're giving people employment. Because, of course, bear in mind that if we stop buying, then people lose jobs. And actually, when the environment really slips on the agenda is when people are hungry and they have to kind of not worry about the environment. They just need cheap and now. So we need to be kind of careful how we do this. But what's good is the more we demand as customers that things are well made and properly sourced and there's a transparent supply chain, the more the supplier, the brand, or the person selling the goods will step up, because they need the business. So it's a sort of natural. So if the client pushes, then the brands will deliver. And then all our supply chains, if we say you're not getting the order unless it's done in this certain way or audited in this certain way, they'll very quickly get the audit. They need the business. So it can happen incredibly. In fact, it is happening very quickly. So I don't want to be negative, because actually there's so much good positive stuff that's happening. But it's just about people being aware.
And something I've been thinking about a lot over the last year, we've all had a lot of time to think, but we've all sacrificed so much for COVID and, you know, that need to keep ourselves and everybody else safe. Why do you think there isn't the same urgency around environmental issues? I mean, there's a bigger growing conversation for sure, but there's still a lot of inaction when, you know, this can lead to substantially more devastating consequences than COVID. Why do you think it is? Is it that perhaps it's not hitting us in the face in the same way?
I think it's exactly that, unfortunately. Yeah. I mean, I had dinner with someone who's been he's incredibly knowledgeable in this area. And he said, you know, it's too late. He said the most frightening thing, said it's too late. Your children will, you know, the planet will overheat. And so people will be migrating from south to north, and we are going to get some flooding, and therefore food's going to become scarce. He said, it's too late. And I said, what? You know, but so therefore we will have to offset as well as reduce. This is really serious. So somehow we have to communicate to people how serious this is and how this will touch them, because, as you say, often until it actually hits them in the face or it affects them directly, it's very hard for people not just to live in the never never. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think in some ways COVID has shown everyone what they can do in terms of change. It's been significant, and actually how scary things are when it goes wrong. I mean, we're not really a generation that's lived through war in the same way that our grandparents did, you know, when everything really does get quite frightening. And I think that we need to realize that this could get quite frightening. It will get quite frightening unless we all make some changes. So hopefully, collectively, we can communicate this so that we can get everyone to make the changes we need.
Mm-hmm. I was speaking to an environmentalist recently, and they said it's like, you know, there's a fire in your living room, and you just close the door and move into another room. You know, ignoring it is really not going to make it go away. So your friend had the right approach too. In terms of
killjoy for dinner, though, I will admit.
And so tell me then, you're just an incredible ambassador for sustainability in the fashion industry. You are the one. How do you think the industry has advanced in terms of diversity and inclusivity then?
Well, I think that's the really important big topic. I mean, I sort of had my entire career to the backdrop of sort of gender equality in the workplace. And, you know, I think we're making strides. We're not there yet for sure, but we're really making strides. And I think that it's been interesting watching what made a difference in that journey. And it was a mixture of, you know, people being vocal. It was a mixture of legislation. It was a mixture of things like, you know, shared parental leave and the gender pay gap and all those sorts of things, which actually contributed. And I think that diversity and sort of racial inequalities are exactly the same. We need to give some shunts, because, you know, if you're not sort of confident enough to get the job because you haven't seen many people like you in that job, then you'll never get the job. Do you know what I mean? So how do we make that happen? We need to promote people and then help them to be more confident so that they in turn can become the role models for the next generation. So it has to happen. It's the only right way to behave. It's the only fair way to behave. And it's the only smart way to behave. I mean, you know, you can't have a business that doesn't represent, you know, your customer base. It's mad. So I think, you know what, it's always uncomfortable, these conversations, but I think it's never more important. And I think there is a momentum. And I think that, you know, I think that everyone's really wants to get it right. And it's just the how, really. But of course, there are, you know, inequalities in education and all sorts of, you know, things that make it quite difficult. So we just need to push hard, push really hard.
Mm-hmm. I'm giving you all the tough questions. You're never going to invite me for dinner.
What's next?
So let's go back a bit then. Can I just ask you about your journey in fashion? Because, you know, it's an incredible story. But when did you know this was a route for you then? What inspired you in your childhood, perhaps, that led you down this route?
It was probably when I was about 5. I always loved making things and making little things to hold things. I often see little girls do that, actually. So lots of little, you know, containers and drawers and zips and things. So I always loved the sort of the art of organization, probably. I always loved craft. And my mother gave me one of her secondhand bags when I was about 16. I remember how it made me feel, actually. I think that's what's interesting about fashion, the sort of the sense of, I don't know, it's kind of the mood changing aspect of fashion. And I still love that. What I don't love is sort of fashion for the sake of saying, look at me, I'm rich. I don't love that sort of status fashion. I love fashion with stories. You know, we have a store called the Bespoke Store, actually, which is all about, it's all about you. It's the Oscar Wilde quote of be yourself, the other places are taken. So, you know, everything is made with your name on it, not mine. And it's the box has your name on it. And you can handwrite any message. It could be a child's handwriting, it could be a drawing from a child. I mean, we've had the most amazing special things that we make. And what's lovely is you're making a story, you're making something that hands down to the next generation. So it's a sort of a moment in time that's sealed, and you can't go back and write as a 3-year-old. But it's that rather than a season. And so those things interest me and still interest me, plus the art of organization, because ultimately a handbag is about taking things as you leave the house and having what you need with you. But I think Five, we're in a bit of a really exciting moment for us. We're opening a little village, actually, on May the 17th in London, which is we're opening all the stores on one little street. In fact, the street where I opened my very first store. So going back to my roots, because actually I think this next sort of 10 years is going to be less about globalization, but actually more about localization and having retail as something you can't get online, you know, so that there's a reason for retail in this digital world, if you like. So it's a lot of fun, and it's about building, you know, a community of people who have the same values as you. And that's partly why I wanted to write the book, really, because actually lots of people write to us all the time and ask advice. And I wanted to kind of write the book to talk about, you know, sort of our values as my values as an individual, but as also as a brand.
But there is, you know, and you, as you mentioned, like, it's a lot of fun. It's incredible, actually, to think that you're opening a village where you once had a store. I think that's just like, that's monumental. And it's a wonderful part of your story. But there's a playfulness, like, fun is important, and there's a playfulness in your designs. And I think that that's what makes them quite special. Even the font of I am a plastic bag, like, there's color in everything that you do, which is just beautiful to see or to experience as a customer.
Thank you. Well, I tell you what, the most fun at the moment is we're opening a cafe, and it's really a cake and biscuit shop. And I have had the most fun doing that. It's like pouring all of the creative ideas we've ever had in fashion into cakes and boxes and bags. And I mean, it's just hilarious. So it's quite a nice new vehicle for kind of creative madness.
And you mentioned the purpose of retail now is about the experience. And there's that conflict between, you know, I can sit at home and go on my laptop and order what I want, or I can get up and go into a store. So there has to be something to lead me there. So what is the focus of retail for you and your brand going forward?
Well, I think it's about, you know, there's a lot about, it's an overused word, but community. It's about the sort of, you know, the people who like what you do and who you enjoy, you know, talking to about your product. I think so. It's therefore it's a touch point to go and sort of explain what you care. There's something brilliant and useful and easy about digital shopping, but it's not the same as touching and feeling. But the idea for us with the village would be almost animating what we do online. So obviously you can very efficiently go online buy what you need. It's incredibly quick and easy. But I want to have the village to have things that you can't get online, or to go deeper into subjects of things that we have online, or to do completely mad things. So, for example, one of the little units we're calling the Village Hall, and because we're launching the book in May as well, we're actually taking the Village Hall and making it into the Anya's hair salon for shampoo and therapy. And you can book in and have a blow dry and a cocktail, and you can book it as four girlfriends, so that you can, I mean, it's like my dream to come and have, you know, hair wash with a bit of sun through the glass on my face and sipping a delicious cocktail. It's everything that I need with my girlfriends right now. But so that will become a really fun little focus for launching the book. It's like a sort of a book launch party, but hopefully a COVID safe one. And then it'll change into something else. It'll be ever evolving fun ideas, which are open to everyone. So it's not just about someone who can buy an expensive handbag. It's also people who share the values and who want to enjoy some of the mad ideas. So creatively, it's really like scratching an itch for me. It's like fashion weeks, but sort of constantly in a way. But it's also open to everyone, and hopefully we'll work hand in hand with digital, but offer something that you can't get in a 2D way online.
Well, it is incredible. The plans are incredible, and books, bags, and now villages. I just think your creativity is endless. It's really inspiring, and makes me feel like the laziest bird in town.
As if. I mean, you don't want to be in my head, trust me. I'd rather be in Ireland with you.
Oh, well, listen, it was so lovely to chat to you. We're so glad your bags are in Brown Thomas, and we just wish you all the best for the future, Anna. It's fabulous to chat.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Really, really lovely chat. I can't wait to be back in Ireland, by the way, my favourite place ever. So as soon as I can, I'll see you there.
We'll see you there.
Thank you for listening to the Brown Thomas podcast. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe and share, and follow us on Official Brown Thomas on Instagram for more updates.